Maine's Political Pulse is made possible in part by Lee Auto Malls, celebrating the return of the Common Ground Country Fair, September 23rd through 25th. Learn more at mofca.org.
This is Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Robbie Feinberg, filling in for Erwin Gratz, and this week I'm joined by Maine Public's chief political correspondent and State House Bureau Chief, Steve Missler. And we've also got a special guest subbing in with us. Randy Billings is a political reporter with the Portland Press Herald. Randy, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, so let's begin with a story that seemingly every Maine politician has weighed in on. Last week, the Monterey Bay Aquarium red-listed American lobster. This basically tells consumers to avoid purchasing lobster, ostensibly over concerns about entanglements with endangered North Atlantic right whales. Virtually every politician in the state, from Governor Mills to her opponent Paula Page to Maine's congressional delegation, have all blasted this move. But while this would appear to be as bipartisan an issue as you can imagine in Maine, we are still seeing candidates attack each other over this. So, Steve, how is this being crafted into a political attack?
Well, essentially, Robbie, Republicans are trying to link Democrats to the national environmental and conservation groups that are pushing for the regulations to protect the whales that are at issue, both in the red listing and, of course, these regulations that are being contested in court, too. And that's why you're seeing statements from the Maine GOP and former Governor Paula Page blasting Mills, whose candidacy in 2018 was supported by those groups or their local affiliates, just as it is this year. The GOP has homed in on that financial support, claiming Mills took, quote, dirty anti-lobster contributions from environmental groups like Maine Conservation Voters, which is the state affiliate of the League of Conservation Voters, which actually supports the whale regulations. But as with many political attacks, Robbie, it's not that black and white. I mean, for example, while it's true that Maine Conservation Voters has bolstered the governor's candidacy, the group has not supported the additional restrictions on lobstermen and has not included any votes on any lobster-related bills in their annual legislative scorecards of state lawmakers during the past decade. The national group, League of Conservation Voters, does support those regulations. In fact, in 2019, it actually dinged Democratic Congresswoman Shelley Pingree and Congressman Jared Golden, both Democrats, for an amendment to a funding bill that would have blocked federal regulators from imposing new restrictions on lobstermen. But look, that all this nuance is difficult to explain even here, let alone understand. So I think that's why you're seeing all the Democrats running for re-election making a really concerted effort to show their allegiance to the lobster industry, as Mills did during a joint press conference in Portland last week.
These guys are fed up. I'm fed up. We're all fed up. The price of bait, the scarcity of bait, the price of fuel, and now these two hits in 1 week? It's outrageous. There's no balancing here. No stopping to take a look at the economic impact of these ill-advised decisions. And it's time they came to the table and talked with us and to find out what this is all about.
So all of this rhetoric might seem over the top, but the lobster industry in this state is an economic and political powerhouse. It's a lot like corn and soybeans in Iowa or coal in West Virginia. Politicians pledge allegiance or they can pay a heavy price.
My sense is that, you know, these attacks from LePage appear to be resonating, you know, within the lobstering industry itself. I mean, we're not talking about a huge constituency here of lobster fishermen. What, there are maybe 6,000 license holders throughout the state. But, you know, this industry has been under attack for a while. Lobstermen have already made all sorts of changes to help protect right whales, changing, you know, the markings on their ropes, switching from knots to splices so that whales are less likely to get caught up, sinking rope on the bottom. All this stuff, you know, takes time. It takes money. And they're definitely looking for someone who's going to stand up and fight for them. And I think they do see Paula Page as, you know, the fighter who is going to do that. And additionally, I think, you know, this outside group attack is potent for fishermen because it also links to renewable energy for fishermen as well. I mean, they're worried about losing fishing grounds to offshore windmills. And of course, Mills is a big proponent of renewable energy. So it kind of filters out into other subjects as well and could even resonate with other industries in the state. You know, it's really about blue collar workers. It's about overregulation. It's about jobs. And, you know, those are potent topics in Maine.
So moving beyond lobster, let's also talk about a new ad that debuted in Maine recently, part of a $10 million total ad buy across several states from the American Principles Project. This ad, it seems to be aiming straight at culture war issues, specifically this book, Gender Queer, that's an award-winning graphic novel about gender identity and sexuality. Steve, the strategy here seems to be using this conservative backlash to LGBTQ books to attack Governor Janet Mills. So first, what is the actual connection they're trying to make here? And do we think it's going to resonate in a place like Maine?
Well, the ad makes an assertion that Mills wants literature like genderqueer in Maine schools. Asked to back up this claim, Terry Schilling, the president of the American Principles Project, directed me to a page on the Maine Department of Education website that includes links to LGBTQ instruction material. And one of those links is to the American Library Association, which recommended Gender Queer, which is one of the reasons why the book is in so many libraries across the country. But look, it's an objectively tenuous connection. I mean, the governor doesn't dictate what books are in Maine public schools or school libraries, but the ad highlights some pretty graphic scenes from the book, and that's going to get some people's attention. Not only that, I think you can argue that the APP effort dovetails with and supports a broader Republican effort to target instruction about race and LGBTQ issues in public schools. And I think the GOP thinks that's a winning issue this year. It was in Virginia, for example, last year when Republicans there elected Glenn Youngkin to become their governor. That was the first time a Republican had been elected in Virginia statewide in more than a decade. And Youngkin, of course, was up here recently campaigning on behalf of Governor LePage and sort of pitching themselves as the education governors. So there's definitely some synergy going on here, whether it's intended or not. But I think it's an issue that we're going to continue to see.
Yeah, and that all of that, it has me thinking about the recent Maine GOP attack ad that got so much attention earlier this year for criticizing an online lesson posted on the Maine Department of Education website. So do we expect this to be a real running issue throughout the rest of the campaign?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that Maine GOP ad you mentioned got a test drive over the summer, and the response must have been good for them because they promptly upped their TV buy and extended it into the fall. So voters are going to get this from the Maine GOP and this outside group, which, as you mentioned, Robbie, has committed to spending $10 million across several states. Maine is one of them, you know, although it's not quite clear how much it will see in spending from that particular group.
Absolutely. And if you just look at, take a step back and look at sort of the political climate and how it's changed over the last year. I mean, earlier this year, they were predicting a Republican red wave across the board. But then what happens? The Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade, and that helps close the enthusiasm gap between Democrats and Republicans. So now Democrats seem really motivated to get out to the polls. And it appears to me that on the Republican side, they view this LGBTQ education in public school as an issue that can help perhaps remotivate their base while also trying to perhaps peel away some of the support Mills may have from suburban moms to try to pull them over onto his side. So I agree with Steve. I think we will see this right through the fall. And Schilling told me earlier this year that, you know, they were testing their messages. And if they think that they can make a difference, they'll jump in. And here they are with a $100,000 ad buy.
So besides just these ads, I feel like we are really starting to see just a deluge of ads. I know I am seeing them on my computer, on TV around this race. Where does the money picture actually stand right now in this fight?
There's a very good reason why you're starting to see that deluge. So far, this election cycle, $3.6 million has been spent by non-candidate groups, and $1.4 million has taken place in the last 2 weeks alone. And every indication shows that it's only just beginning. You know, there's some estimates out there that as much as $27 million could be spent in this race for governor. And, you know, that would, of course, be more than in 2018 when we saw $18
million. $27 million. Wow. Lastly, Randy, I want to talk to you about this great article that you put together last week, going deep into the relationship between Governor Mills and former Governor Paul LePage when he was in office and she was Maine's attorney general. To do this, you scoured through records from the Maine State Archives and documented these years-long disagreements over things as basic as the attorney general's actual role within the state. What did you see as the biggest areas of disagreement between the two politicians here? Did any particular moments or documents really stand out to you around this?
Well, it appeared to really stem from a fundamental disagreement about what the attorney general's role was, and that in turn, you know, branched out into all these future debates, you know, not unlike we saw with President Trump and the Department of Justice. And Governor LePage had a view that the attorney general had a role to represent his administration and his policies, whereas Mills and even members of LePage's own legal team understood that, you know, the Maine attorney general, who's appointed by the legislature, actually has a lot of discretion and autonomy in what cases they choose to take on in the public interest. And of course, they have to provide legal advice to state agencies. But I think most telling was just watching the frustration grow over time and how LePage sought to leverage funding for the attorney generals to bring her more towards his view, and how that didn't work. And how, you know, surprisingly, how it actually seemed to impede some of LePage's stated policy goals of prosecuting welfare fraud or protecting children from abuse, because he was refusing to sign financial orders to hire attorneys in like Washington County, for example, and district attorneys were writing him saying, you got to sign these orders. We have a backlog of cases. Our attorneys are getting very frustrated, and how quickly he would pivot that towards a political and at times personal attack on Mills.
Randy, did you feel like there are particular insights that you feel like are applicable to the current race between Mills and LePage too?
I do. I mean, I think it just helps, you know, generally explain LePage's desire to jump back in this race. It's clear, you know, from what I saw that, you know, he views her as a rival. He had won re-election in 2014 with a record number of votes for governor, only to have Mills be ushered in 2018 with a record number of votes as governor. And after he called her gubernatorial ambitions far-fetched. So it help explains that. And I think it's going to present an interesting dynamic when all these candidates get on the same stage for a debate. It's going to be really interesting to see how they react to one another and the charges that they make. I mean, you know, LePage is a fighter in terms of rhetoric, but, you know, Janet Mills can turn a phrase and can hold her own up there. So those are going to be pretty interesting debates for sure.
Yeah, I'll just add real quick that the thing I liked about Randy's story, a couple things. One was that rivalry was covered as it happened. And it was nice to see like the whole thing and encapsulated in a clear narrative, which was nice. The other thing is, and I think Randy already kind of pointed this out, is that it just really illustrated how LePage viewed the AG as specifically representing his office and his interests, when that's not how the office is designed. I mean, it may operate that way in other states, but here it has a lot of autonomy. And it also happens to represent the interests of the legislature, which elects the AG in Maine. And that can create a lot of tension between a governor and the AG. And I think a great example of this was in 2015, when LePage tried to veto 65 bills past the statutory deadline and created this huge standoff with the legislature. And Mills basically intervened on behalf of the legislature in that case, which most certainly angered LePage, especially when the Maine law court decided in the legislature's favor and cited some of Mills's arguments in its ruling.
And what some other interesting moments in those correspondences going back and forth is that Mills was more than happy to remind LePage and his legal staff that whenever they took a position contrary to an argument that Mills had laid out, they had lost in court. And at one point, she told them, "I rest my case."
And that was Randy Billings, a political reporter with the Portland Press Herald. And you also heard Steve Missler. He's Maine Public's chief political correspondent and State House bureau chief. Thanks for joining us for Maine's Political Pulse this week. Remember, you can head to our website to subscribe to our weekly newsletter at mainepublic.org/pulse. And you can also hear an abridged version of the Pulse podcast each Friday evening at around 5:35 on Maine Public Radio. Our music is by Rob Holt. I'm Robbie Feinberg. Erwin Gratz will be back next week for another edition of Maine's Political Pulse.